For some of us, personal finances aren't just personal. They include a lot more people than ourselves. Loved ones, neighbors, the communities we call home, and the causes we hold in our hearts. At Thrivent, we help plan your financial picture with the bigger picture in mind. Because even though our business is helping guide your finances, our ambition is to make it mean so much more. Thrivent, where money means more. Connect with us at Thrivent.com.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
I want to thank the league for creating the play-in tournament. Thank you, Adam.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
A sideline three for Steph Curry.
From The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. Earlier on the show, longtime golf writer Alan Shipnuck, 2026 NFL draft prospect Jonah Coleman, basketball Hall of Famer Chris Webber. Coming up, actor Bob Odenkirk. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air, and it's going to be great. Bob Odenkirk is here. In about 15 minutes, we're going to bring him out. We're going to go down every possible pop culture lane with this guy, Jimmy McGill, a.k.a. Saul Goodman. And he is currently in theaters nationwide starting tomorrow in a film called Normal, which is a wild movie, start to finish. And we'll talk about that with him in a matter of moments. I believe he's got a special Cubs hat with him as well. It is all good in this hood. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We've already had great chatter on this program with Alan Shipnuck, the golf writer, about what's going on with the LIV Tour. Chris Webber as well. Jonah Coleman is an under-the-radar running back prospect in next week's draft in Pittsburgh, PA. We're going to be taking this show to Pittsburgh next week. Cam Hayward's on tomorrow's program. Zach Galifianakis in studio first up. And then the director, Peter Farrelly, will be here in studio on hour number three. Lots of laughs at What's More Likely Friday. And I mentioned 844-204-RICH is the number to dial on the show. The Kansas City Chiefs are ninth overall on the clock. Their general manager, Brett Veach, met with the media today via Zoom. And the question is, will Jeremiah Love be available for him? That was the concept going into the combine. Then coming out of the combine, everyone's like, there's no chance of it. Daniel Jeremiah and his mock draft on the Sports Center I hosted last Sunday night in Connecticut from Bristol said the Chiefs can sit there and have Jeremiah Love drop to him because no one else has taken him until the Chiefs go, and the Jets are going to hop up and take Carnell Tate in front of them. That's the way he went in his mock draft. Mm-hmm. Brett Veach with talking about the first soundbite, I believe, is him talking about the needs for the Chiefs going into this draft.
There's a lot of areas to improve on our roster on both sides of the football. So I think it does open up that nine pick to go in any one direction. And you know, certainly we'll see how the first five or six picks go. But I think whether it's, you know, the defensive backfield, the offensive line, edge rusher, receiver, again, you know, we need help in all those areas. So I do think that, you know, we'll be in a position there to get one of those players and then add throughout the course of the draft. So I just think where we are with our roster, you really can't eliminate any one need because I think, you know, there are a lot of them.
So obviously you heard running back is not one of them. He mentioned four different position groups.
Yeah.
Edge rusher. And, you know, Bailey and Reese should be gone by then. And if they don't like, if they aren't going to go move up for Bailey or Reese, there's Bain who they could snag. There's Hakeem Mezidor who they could snag. There's Keldrick Falk, who a lot of people are pegging for a much later draft status for him. You want to go offensive lineman? It's possible Spencer Fanneau will be available. Francis Mauanoa, I think, would be a stretch to be available at nine. Caden Proctor, who a lot of folks are talking about more and more from Alabama. Blake Miller from Clemson is another one. Monroe Freeling is a Georgia Bulldog. There's that defensive back. They should have, if they want to take a shot at Caleb Downs, they could grab him, but that's, he's a safety. You're talking about a corner, Mansoor Delane. You want to say, okay, Trent McDuffie's gone. We keep doing this thing where we draft him and then we just won't pay him.
Turn him out.
Generationally, you know, or market changing money. Let's start again with Mansoor Delane. You can do that. You could, you could also snag McCoy from Tennessee, right? Who, yeah, I know the Cowboys, a lot of people are penciling him in.
A lot of 12.
You could do that. The wide receiver, Jordan Tyson. That's who Todd McShay has them taking out of Arizona State. Carnell Tate should be gone. Mekhi Lemon, if you want to go him, or Mark Cooper Jr. is another. And Jeremiah Love, do you turn him down? Because you've already signed Kenneth Walker to that free agent contract. And in terms of the run game, though, this is what Veach had to say.
First off, with Ken, you know, to your point, Pete, we do have some talent on the offensive line. I mean, everyone knows the potential and the flashes that Josh has shown, and then working on that interior with Kingsley and Trey and Creed. You know, I think it'd be a smart play to take advantage of that interior trio there, and you know, to be more violent and to kind of utilize those guys and their strengths. Yeah, you know, I think that is going to be something we're looking forward to, and certainly with EB coming back here, I think, you know, with his running back roots, and you know, there's going to be a high priority with that run game. So, you know, I think we're excited about that.
Okay.
Peter Schrager talking today about Bane to the Chiefs.
That would be no surprise to me.
Visited them on Thursday.
Okay. No surprise to me, but they can go in any direction.
Yeah.
They really can. And get a really good player.
Yeah, and when are they going to pick in the top 10 again?
I can't foresee it.
Right.
I think they're going to bounce back and they're going to be the Chiefs.
Feels like it. Feels like it for sure.
844-204-RICH, number dial. I got a top five here. Top five teams that should trade up in the NFL draft presented by Hyundai. Hit it, please.
High five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rich's top five.
All right, everybody. Here's my top five teams that should trade up in the NFL draft presented by Hyundai. And you know what? It's so easy to do it just that way. I can't just do it straight up.
What does that mean?
What I'm going to do? Well, I'm going to go next level. That's what I do. So we do.
Our truth.
Our truth.
Come on now.
Yeah.
What's up?
I'm going to give you the team that should trade up. And for which player they should trade.
Rich Eisen, this is why you're on a different level, man.
See? I mean, a top five list could be here.
Yeah.
I'm going here.
Yeah.
You might think it's here.
Nope.
I go here.
Yeah. What else?
And for the radio audience, each time I say the second here, it's higher than the first. Painting word pictures. Number five, the Browns should trade up for Jeremiah Love.
Oh, wow.
Why are we, what, I mean, what's going on here? I know Quinshon Judkins.
Yeah, no, I get Judkins it. Love, okay.
It's not, I have no Judkins love.
Well, he's an Ohio State guy.
It's got nothing to do with that.
He's a Notre Dame guy.
This guy is that special.
Yeah.
He is that special. Game-changing players. How many do the Browns have? Why not add another one?
Yeah.
Figure it out. And he can also play different positions. Let's go. Judkins here, Love there. What are we doing? Don't make it harder. Make it easier.
They could just take him at six.
They could, potentially, or just move up a spot or two. Flip a little bit of, you know, a little bit of second, third day Love for Jeremiah Love. Could be all it takes.
All you need.
Is.
Right.
Number four, the Chiefs. They should trade up for Jeremiah Love.
Wait a second.
You're picking us. You're Wait picking something second. Up here.
This smells familiar.
This is nice.
Are you picking something
this
up here?
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, just the first two.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Just the first two.
I can't get it.
They should do it.
Okay.
I know they just signed Kenneth Walker.
Yeah, but...
But Love and...
Why wouldn't... Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go. One more.
Kenneth Walker, he didn't even lead the Seahawks in touchdowns. That was Zach Charbonnet. So...
But he got the trophy.
I get it. I understand. He had a great game. He did. And he had some nice run physically and spiritually for Seattle for years. But it's Jeremiah Love.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying.
Number three on the list are the Saints. The Saints should trade up for whoever the Jets don't take it to. That's what they should do. Or they should trade up for Jeremiah Love. I know they got Kamara.
But you're talking Bailey, Reese.
Correct. Whoever the Jets don't take it to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Saints go up and take at three.
Yeah.
Why not? That's what the Saints should do. Number two, the Jets should move up. And they should move up for Carnell Tate. Mm. When DJ put this one in my head, I'm like, that makes sense. And now we've got Todd McShay saying the same thing.
Man, can't show that picture enough.
You know what? I don't care.
I just think it's cool. It's aura.
I think it's aura, and I understand where it was at Michigan, and this was the day, that was the play where it was just like, yeah, this is not going to work.
Yeah, it's not happening.
This was the message sender. He sent a message to 100,000 people, and he put his hands on his hips and like, are you not entertained? And he was on our show on Wednesday. He held up the gold pants, the first of its kind since 2019. So I hadn't seen that in a while. I appreciate him refreshing. Number one, the number one team that should trade up in the draft, the Cowboys should trade up.
Boom.
For Jeremiah Love. Why wouldn't they?
Come on, Joe. No.
Why wouldn't they?
Because
why not?
Because that's the one side of the ball that we're pretty decent at. We're really good at. No, we just paid our running back.
You could always be better.
Super.
Javonte Williams or Jeremiah Love. What are we doing?
Super. Charge it.
No.
Supercharge it.
He's going to be great.
Who loves to put stars with the star on the field?
I can hear Monaco in the back screaming.
Who wants to put stars in a helmet with a star on it?
Go up to four to get ahead of Washington and the Giants.
Do it.
No.
Do it.
No.
And then you still have one in your back pocket for the defender you need.
Yeah.
All due respect to Jeremiah Love, but...
Hey, let me say, did the Eagles need Saquon?
Yeah.
In retrospect, yes. But at the time,
pretty big luxury.
Did the 49ers need Christian McCaffrey? The time, listen, I'm just saying, when you add special players, you turbocharge what you already have working. Do it. Yeah.
No.
If they do it, you'll call me. Here's what I want. I'm sitting on the NFL Network draft set. Everyone else has shoulder on me. Okay. And I'm sitting on that draft set in Pittsburgh on Thursday night, and the Cowboys do this. You're going to text me, this is awful. Or you will just be losing your mind.
First of all, I might run up on set with you. And
Jeremiah Love is more surefire than any defender the Cowboys can go ahead and get.
That sounds great when you're doing this bit, but we all know how you feel about Sonny Styles, so I don't think you really believe that.
It's not a bit.
But Sonny Styles isn't going to be there at 12.
It's not a bit, if you believe
apparently
it.
Apparently, we're not going to be there at 12 either, so... No, stop it.
Yeah, I think we need one more.
Got one more.
Come on.
All right, this one's for you, Chris. This one's for you, pal. I'm not saying the Pats should trade up.
We're at 31.
The Pats should pony up what Howie wants. Give it
to him.
31st overall and a third day pick.
Give it to him.
Would do it. It would do it. I've asked a couple of people.
You have.
In our because I didn't want to come on the air and sound like I don't know what I'm talking about or I'm throwing things around just against the wall to see if it sticks. I don't do those things.
So this is a report.
It's not a report.
You said you made some calls.
I've made some calls to some evaluators. Would this do it in your estimation? Would this be something that Howie would go, yeah, I know the cap hit. 31st overall and a third day pick to get AJ Brown for your guy in Drake May. Do it.
Come on. Come on, TJ.
Do it.
You want him gone?
I mean, I do.
Let the Eagles take another guy in the back end of the draft and do it. A lot of folks have told me this is compensation that Howie would have to sit there and go, huh?
It's happening.
And that's my top five teams that should trade up in the NFL draft.
Our truth.
Brought to you by the all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid. Learn how it makes every day epic at HyundaiUSA.com. Epic. Jeremiah Love. Just like Zeke back in the day.
Oh, and that was great, but what do we have to show for that?
I mean, it's not Zeke's fault.
No. Definitely not. Zeke is probably one of the most underrated running backs of his generation.
Here we go.
Facts.
But no, I don't like
he would. You will text me. I can't believe we just did that. Oh, what a shame.
Oh, and I'll have it live on video.
Okay.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
No. We're sticking to the plan.
Things up.
Two defenders, all right? Two guys preferably in the back of the defense. Let's go. Okay. Right there.
I understand what the conventional wisdom says. I'm going the other way around.
Well, you don't have a connection to the Cowboys like me.
I don't.
Because I'm like this.
I know. Yeah, I know. Now you are.
What up, Steven?
You got business cards.
Yeah. What's up, Tad?
All right, let's take a break and bring Bob Odenkirk out here, ladies and gentlemen, on the Rich Eisen Show, normal in theaters nationwide starting tomorrow.
For some of us, personal finances aren't just personal. They include a lot more people than ourselves. Loved ones, neighbors, the communities we call home, and the causes we hold in our hearts. At Thrivent, we help plan your financial picture with the bigger picture in mind. Because even though our business is helping guide your finances, our ambition is to make it mean so much more. Thrivent, where money means more. Connect with us at Thrivent.com.
In a world in need of a hero, one man rises to the challenge in style. He is just driving the kids to soccer practice. Make every day feel epic in an all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid with up to an EPA-estimated 619 miles of range on select trims, advanced tech, and class-leading interior space. Because when you're hauling kids' gear, snacks, and backpacks, space matters. And so does comfort. Just make sure they keep their cleats off the seats. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Funny and loves film so much. And it's why this movie, Normal, feels sometimes like a horror film, a comedy, then it's an action film. It's kind of just such a mix of genres because these guys, this is their life. This is all they thought about since they were kids.
Right.
I focused on sketch comedy. I can talk to you about Bob and Ray.
Yeah.
I can talk to you about Stephen Leacock
going
back to the 1800s,
right.
early 1900s. They did movies and they did action movies.
Well, part of this, you came up with part of the story though, right? Like you're
I did. Credited. I helped with the first third, which is the small town. I grew up in Naperville, Illinois.
Sure.
And I actually was the one who pitched the title Normal because of Normal, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we showed this movie in Normal, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
which was so fun to do.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I went there. I went down to Normal.
Yeah.
They have an old theater. They still have the old marquee and the old entrance.
Yeah.
And then they built a beautiful new theater inside it. And we showed this film to anybody who can get a ticket, and they loved it. And so anyway, Derek wrote the story, and I said, I want to build out that small town fun.
Yeah.
And then I said, what if we call it Normal? Because, of course, he's from Wisconsin, Derek Kolstad.
Right next door.
And he knew Normal, Illinois.
Yeah. And it's like I said, it's just a ton of fun. And it looked, you know, this and Nobody. You've been kicking ass the last couple of
Well, once you get up to speed on it, you know, I mean, why stop? I would happily do more if people want. It was always a bit of a lark, you know, like a side.
Yeah.
I wonder if this could work. This would be weird if this worked.
Right.
And then it worked. And also the training was actually really good for me. Like, I like it. If I have to work out, we all do.
Yeah.
I would rather do a stunt workout than just some dumb thing that I would do on my own. It's more interesting.
Yeah. Not a lot of workouts required for Saul Goodman back in the day.
No, but I was doing Nobody workouts starting in the third season of Saul Goodman.
No
because,
kidding.
Yeah, because that movie took 2+ years to get you know, in shape.
Yes.
And I was getting in shape doing the workouts. And Daniel Bernhardt, who trained me for Nobody and Normal, would fly down to Albuquerque twice a year.
Yeah.
And run a workout with me and sometimes show, because I would work out at like the MMA gym, Jackson Wink there.
ABQ in Albuquerque?
Yeah.
Albuquerque?
I would work out at their beginner gym.
Okay.
Or the one that, anyway, fighters know it. And then there I would be doing my stunt fighting workout, which is not real fighting. Guys, please. I know. And they would laugh. They would laugh. Yeah. Well, we would show them the moves.
Yeah.
And they would be like, what? Yeah. What are you doing? Because it's not really anything you really want to do. It's actually dangerous, what I learned, if you were in a real fight. I put myself in more danger.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, you're
yeah, because you open your face up and you do these wide swings. It's
different.
All stuff you should never do.
Survival's different than acting, for sure. Yeah. Normal, again, is available in theaters nationwide tomorrow, April 17th. Go check it out. Look at Henry right there.
Do you love that poster?
I love it. It's like, it's old school.
It's right old school.
It's old school.
Which the movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's got like a Jackie Brown feel to it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like
yeah.
like a Tarantino. There's some Tarantino turns.
And if you look at it and you blur your eyes, it's kind of a skull.
Oh.
With the teeth of the people.
Okay.
The upper
look
teeth.
At you, man. I didn't.
That's brilliant piece
next,
of work.
That's next level.
By the artist.
Bob Odenkirk here on the program. You're wearing your Cubs hat?
I am. I like to get interesting Cubs hats. There's a couple stores across from Wrigley Field.
And right.
I like the Cubs normal hat, but I like oddball ones.
Okay.
Like interesting. This is a kind of, it's a little too much of a choo-choo train hat, a little too high up. But I like to wear.
It's got like an old, you know, 79 Pittsburgh Pirates hat.
It's
feel
not
to
right
it,
you know? In no, a way. And from a distance, you're like, you're not, that's not a Cubs hat, but obviously it screams Cubs at you.
It does indeed.
But I like to wear the more offbeat ones. So
when was the last? You got to. Did you ever meet Harry Carey? Did you ever meet
him? I didn't meet him. No, I sat right under him when I was a kid. My yeah. grandfather grew up four blocks from Comiskey.
So
he saw Babe
Southside.
Ruth. My grandpa saw Babe Ruth play.
No
at
kidding.
Comiskey. Yes.
No.
And then he took us. He was a Sox fan yeah. because of that.
Yes.
But then he changed his allegiance to the Cubs. And I think it's because he lived in Oak Park then as a retired older man.
Yeah.
And the Cubs signal was very good as opposed to the Sox signal. Not to mention the games were on every day in the afternoon.
Right.
And if you're getting old, you don't want to wait up and watch all night. Who's with your... a bad, terrible signal. Your eyes are already bad.
Right.
And now the signal's bad. So he switched to the Cubs. So we all switched to the Cubs. Sorry, Sox. But the first time I saw Harry, we sat right under him
yeah.
at Comiskey, and he put the net down and got stuff to sign. And mm-hmm. that's where I met, that's where I was introduced to the legend that was Harry Carey.
I met him one time
because
I went to Northwestern Medill School of Journalism graduate school program.
Wow.
And the Cubs were when I was a student, the Cubs were introducing Tom Treblehorn as their manager in 1994, 95. And I went to a late morning press conference at Wrigley Field. Mm. I showed up early because I wanted to be one of the first ones there. And there was only one person there. Already deep into a Bloody Mary.
Oh boy, was
Harry Carey at 10 in the morning already was.
What a thing to be
yeah.
Harry Carey.
Right?
What part of his life did he realize, oh, I'm Harry Carey? I'm a mascot. It's like I live inside of a costume that everyone is so happy to see the minute they see it. I think sometime during his Sox years, don't you think?
Right.
Because before that was some turbulence
indeed.
In his life.
Yeah, very much
yes,
so.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
St. Louis.
Not great. Yeah, I know St. Louis.
Not good.
Not good.
You want to read about it, go ahead and
Google
read
it.
About it.
Yeah, no,
but careful. After you get through that, I think you go like, so I can drink in the morning and watch a baseball game and just chatter, and people are going to, all right, I'll do that. I will choose that over what I just got through. What he went through, right?
No doubt.
I don't really know the specifics, but I kind of know.
It'll give you a different look on life, I'd imagine.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing that he knew who he was and he shared it with people and was so happy to do that.
Were you on the SNL staff when Will Ferrell was doing him?
You're already gone. Before that.
You were there before that, right?
Yeah.
87 to 91 or something like that, right?
That's right.
Who was on the staff when you were
there? I had two sort of teams of cast members. Jan Hooks, Nora Dunn, John Lovitz, and then into Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman, and then into, I guess, three, 1 year with Farley and Spade and Sandler. Yeah, so I knew all those people, and I worked with all those people, but I did my best work with the latest crew, you know, Sandler and Spade and Rock, because I finally understood how to write for that show. It was very hard for me. That show was so hard for me.
Why?
I mean, it's hard for anyone.
Right.
It's just that damn thing is happening. It's happening in 4 days. Right. And what the show wants, it was never easy for me to grasp what the show wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I love Monty Python. And that's just sort of fundamentally a different thing.
Right.
And so I just hadn't adjusted. It took me 3 years to adjust, really.
Right.
And then here comes Sandler and Spade and Rock, and I'm finally getting good at this thing. And then they don't know how to do anything, and I was able to, like, help them. That meant a lot. That felt good to me. And, of course, I'd written the motivational speaker for Farley while I was doing Second City over the summer in between SNL seasons. I wrote that scene for him, which later played well on SNL. But just to be able to help in my last year at Saturday Night Live, to help Chris, to help Adam and Farley, was such a good feeling. And it was a weird moment of like, boy, I could actually do this now.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to perform, and I knew I wasn't going to get that chance because I just wasn't good enough. Mm. I wasn't going to ask Lorne. So I called Lorne and I said, I think I have to leave. Thank you. Because I want to be a performer sometimes. I felt embarrassed to say it. He was very gracious about it because he likes to perform too.
Yes.
And so he understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt weird, you know, like, sorry. And I said, you don't have to, I'm not asking you to put me on.
Right.
I'm not good enough. I got to go get good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left and came to LA and, you know, I did. I did one-man shows and stand-up, and I also carried on writing for television as well.
Sure. So you wrote The Van Down by the River?
I did. I wrote that for Chris at Second City. I've talked about it a lot. Everyone.
Please. No,
but it was actually a big deal to me. Of course, I love Chris, and everyone who knew him loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a perfect little lightning strike. He did this improvisation. I was in it too with Jill Talley at the Second City show, and he did a coach yelling at the kids about, you know, a drug, anti-drug thing. And I had been listening to Tony Robbins a little bit. Somehow he was coming onto the scene.
Yeah.
And then I had this thought about a motivational speaker who uses himself as a negative example of what you don't want to be. And then I had just seen Chris do this coach. I sat down, wrote that sketch just the way it's done, brought it in, handed it to Chris. Boom. I mean, magic. And
magic is right.
I mean, really, just, right. You know, one of the things that's hard, this is not a show for comedy sketch writers, is it?
We talk about this sort of stuff all the time, Bob.
Go ahead. Is it okay to go a little deep? In the writing game, writers want the writing to be the star,
mm-hmm.
but the writing is not the star in sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The performance is the star.
Uh-huh.
So what's great about the motivational speaker sketch is it is really 50-50, maybe 60-40, which is to say the writing has a value up to 40%.
Yeah.
It's still weighted towards performance.
Well, I mean, when he comes out dressed that way.
I mean, his movements. Physical movements. I mean, it's insane.
Right?
And by the way, when he did it at Second City, which is where we first did it, and I played the dad, Chris would not finish that sketch until he made every performer laugh every single night, 7 shows a week. He would not stop. And, you know, he won. He won every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my daughter asked me, when she was very young, like 7 years old, what's the most fun you ever had doing what your job? And right away, and it was years earlier that I'd done that sketch, I said this sketch that I did with my friend Chris Farley, every time I did that sketch was the most fun I ever had.
I love it. Bob Odenkirk here on The Rich Eisen Show. How did you first hear about Saul Goodman?
I was sitting at my desk here in Hollywood. I'd been directing some feature films. I'd been writing TV shows. In fact, I'd written one about a minor league baseball team called the San Diego Snakes.
Okay.
And FX was great about it. And I love minor league baseball. I love reading about it.
Yeah.
It's just such a tough world, you know, and it asks a lot of people. And, you know, there's some great books about it.
Sure.
And so my friend Reed Harrison, he knows a lot more about baseball than I did. We had written this pilot. So it was in the stages of dying. FX was great about it, but they were like, we can't. It was so much hassle, Rich, because we wanted to shoot alongside a real minor league team. Mm-hmm. And we had found this private league.
Okay.
Three teams that was going to consider letting us shoot, you know, with them.
Uh-huh.
But it was such a hassle. I mean, it was so much hassle.
So it's a good thing you got this call about Saul.
So I'm sitting there. Here's two stacks on my desk. I have film scripts here.
Yeah.
I have TV scripts here to direct.
Okay.
To consider directing.
Yeah.
I had some cachet as a director at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a phone call. My agent says this to me. They're going to ask you to do a part in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say no.
Because
I said no to a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And he goes, it's called Breaking Bad. Now, Breaking Bad had been on already.
Yes.
But it had been on for an abbreviated season, 7 episodes, and there was a writer's strike. And it paled in light of Mad Men, which was such a breakout, massive hit.
For AMC.
And then this other show, Breaking Bad, is like, why are they even keeping that on? I mean, they've got their big hit. Why do it? And he goes, don't say no. They're going to offer you this role. Okay. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, don't worry about it. Just send me the script. Of course, right away, I'm like, I don't know. I called my friend Reed, who had written this pilot with. I go, did you ever see the show Breaking Bad? He goes, that's the best show on TV. You got to do it. Do not say no. I go, all right. I hadn't seen it. I'd only seen the billboards.
Mm-hmm.
I only knew it from the Tidy Whitey guy. In the and, well, Lucy Whitey, I think. Vince sent me the script, and I'm looking at it, and I immediately knew how to play this guy. But I also was like, boy, he talks a lot, this character. They're not going to use this. This is way too much chatter. You know, you don't do it. And in comedy writing, no character talks for a paragraph. It's two lines, three lines, and then somebody else says something. And so this character just ran and ran. So Vince calls me, and I go, he goes, we need you for 3 or 4 episodes. We're not sure which. All I was there to do was to get this plot to move forward. You know, they were kind of stuck in a corner. And I said, well, I can't do 4 because I was signed up to do How I Met Your Mother. So I figured that might kill it. But he's like, okay, we'll do three episodes with you. And also, I didn't learn the script because I was like, there's no way they're going to have me talk this much. Nobody talks this much on TV. So I didn't bother to learn it. And I didn't watch the show. I knew it was a drama.
Jeez.
I had little kids at home.
Yeah.
And I knew it was violent. I knew it was violent.
Yeah.
So, and my kids, you know, kids will wander into your room when they're that age, 5 years old, 4 years old. You put anything on the TV that you don't want a kid to see, a movie or something.
What's dad
guaranteed doing? They're walking in at 2 a.m. It doesn't matter what time it is. That's going to magically make that happen. Right. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, of course.
It's like the life, you know? Sure. You turn your phone off because you're like, I'm going to take a break from my phone.
Yeah.
You turn it on an hour later, 50 messages. Where the hell are you?
That's right, I know.
And, you know.
Go figure.
And so I hadn't watched the show. I knew it was a drama. I was, you know, thankful for the opportunity to try to live in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't learn the script. And I get it on Friday. I get the blue pages, the last pages. And I fly down there like on Friday. And I get the blue pages on Thursday or Friday morning. And it's exactly the same. One word has changed. One word. I'm like, oh, thank you for that. I got to learn this? So so I spend all weekend, you know, I'm kind of scared. And I learn this wonderful dialogue. So great. But in learning that dialogue, in deconstructing it, is where I thought a lot about drama and what this is and how it's not just a run-on paragraph of me talking to Walter White and yammering for no reason. It's a guy watching another guy's eyes and trying stuff on him, trying this, trying that, right. trying this, trying that. Is he, am I getting him? Am I getting him? Have I got him? Have I got him? It's he's, you know, taking stabs in the dark mm-hmm. with whoever he's talking to.
Right.
And looking to get a reaction and connect. And so that was then, that was Saul. Saul was always, everything he said mattered, even though he said a lot and it kind of flew off into the air.
Right. But then obviously Better Call Saul comes around.
Yeah. Well, then that's now, a whole nother level. Now.
I imagine like you would have to, you had to have reconfigured the way you thought about playing Saul Goodman for that.
I had to reconfigure how I thought about it, acting and being serious about that job and what that job was, because it really was a huge qualitative difference. It wasn't quantitative, which is how I talked to myself. I said, so what? I'm going to talk more. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, in other words, I was trying not to be intimidated by being the lead by just saying to myself, you've done a lot of acting. So what? You're going to talk a little more.
Right.
Nothing. Don't get build it up in your mind. But it was not that. It was fundamentally a different thing. The degree of depth and layering you have to think about and try to bring in that the writing presented, you know, it just set me back for, I mean, it was 2 years of sweat, of real fear and sweat. I lost my voice on the first week before. And by the way, I'm losing my voice now because I've done so much promotion for Normal. But I'm happy to do it because I love that movie. But anyway, it was, boy, that thing knocked me on my ass. And so did Broadway when I did
Glengarry Glen.
I thought I was past right. being intimidated by this job. Hmm. But it was a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing at an older age to be invited to challenge yourself. It's a gift. It's a crazy gift. But it's also scary as hell.
I got to tell you, though, you pulled it off because, I mean, you know, Saul Goodman went from a character in Breaking Bad that was occasional comic relief.
Yeah.
And obviously a very important part of the plot and the story and a crucial character to in Better Call Saul. It was a love story. It was a story about brotherly love or jealousy. It was, a Breaking Bad drug cartel, intense storyline. It was all of that.
You know,
all of that, man. And you killed it. You killed it.
Thank you so much. I mean, I the fear helped me, of course. Fear can help you to dig in and work hard. I always felt that the guy's story was one that, you know, we tell in America. We tell stories of people who find their voice and their strength and their confidence at the age of 21, at the age of 17, at the age of 23. That's the story we like to tell. Mm-hmm. And Saul was a guy who had a gift of some sort of speaking, of analyzing people, of swaying people, convincing them of things. But he couldn't find a place to put it. He didn't know where it belonged, and he wanted this respect from his brother and from his love interest, and he couldn't get it. And I think that his journey is probably a more understood and shared thing of a guy moving into his 30s and 40s even, and going, I know I've got something to offer. I know it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it work. But where do I put it? That people will look at me and go like, hey, you're great.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, good job.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find the place to put it that everyone agrees. And I just think people relate to that. They love to hear stories about magical, unicorns. Who, Pete Crow Armstrong's.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. That's a story we want to hear. We right. love that story. But that's not most people's story. Most people's story is stumbling through their 20s, somewhere in their 30s going, I think, I belong over here.
Right.
And then grinding it, making their way to some power and some confidence and some appreciation, but hopefully by their 40s.
And every single time I was sitting there rooting for you character to find the right spot to put it, and it looked like you were going to do it. It all turned to crap.
Which is what led me to be in an action character.
I love
that not quitting that Saul had.
I've got to take a quick break on the radio side of things, and if you don't mind, we'll just finish up the hour together. I love it.
Cool.
Bob Odenkirk is here. Normal is going to be in theaters starting tomorrow nationwide. We're back with Bob Odenkirk to just wrap things up in a sec. Rich Eisen here. I've traveled all over for some of the biggest NFL moments you can imagine. Conference championships, Super Bowls, draft weekends, and everywhere I go, the city just feels different. It's buzzing, packed, electric. Now, take that energy and multiply it by the entire world. That's what's coming this summer with the FIFA World Cup. Fans from every corner of the globe are going to be traveling to experience it live. And when that many people come to town, they're all looking for a place to stay. And that got me thinking. If you live in or near a host city, this is one of those rare moments. You already have a space. This summer, you could list your space on Airbnb while fans are in town for the FIFA World Cup. Not as a full-time thing. Not as some huge lifestyle change. Just during an event when demand is naturally high. When I travel for big games, I just want a comfortable place in a real neighborhood. And that's exactly what so many visiting fans will be looking for. If you've ever thought about listing your space, this summer is a great time as we welcome FIFA World Cup fans. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quick time out. Some breakfast intel you want to know about. Kodiak Frozen Power Waffles and Flapjacks are built for busy mornings. Heat it, eat it, and you're out the door. No long prep, no complicated game plan. They're packed with 12 to 14 grams of protein per serving, a good source of fiber, and crafted with 100% whole grains, not refined white flour. So you're getting something that actually fuels you. And there's depth on the roster. Buttermilk and vanilla, blueberry, chocolate chip, even gluten-free options. Breakfast that delivers. Snack that delivers. Find Kodiak Frozen Waffles and Flapjacks in the frozen aisle at your local grocery store. They're the ones with the bear on the box.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Every time you see Saul squeal that car to a stop or turn a corner really fast, that's me going hard. I swear to God, I almost flipped that esteem. I'm pulling into a parking lot and I turned so hard and I was going so fast and I caught so many great kudos from the stunt team because I would stop that thing on a freaking dime.
I love it.
I would.
Fantastic. This is the perfect time for me to tell you that you can make every day feel epic in the all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid with up to an EPA estimated 619 miles of range on select trims, advanced tech, and class-leading interior space. Because when you're hauling kids' gear, snacks, and backpack, space matters, and so does comfort. Just make sure they keep their cleats off the seat. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for details. That's the all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid. Normals in theaters near you starting tomorrow. Bob Odenkirk here. I got about 3 minutes left. You got a good, your favorite Cranston story, Brian?
Brian Cranston? Oh, well, it's the one where I'm sitting in the makeup trailer and I'm in my second season of Saul.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen the show. Or, I mean, of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, right, right.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm looking at the pages, they're talking about something and talking about Gus, and I'm like, well, you and Gus, you know, you're working together, right? So you should, I don't know, I said something about he and Gus. Mm. By the way, they always show this damn picture of me. I'm wearing a bulletproof vest. People are like, Odenkirk lost weight. The character is wearing a bulletproof vest for like five episodes under his shirt. And everyone's like, boy, remember when he was so chunky?
Well, now we know why you were. So you're talking to Cranston.
And he goes, he looks at me and he goes, Gus and I aren't friends. You don't know the show, do you? He goes, you've never seen the show, have you? And I go, he's right. I hadn't seen it. I went home and watched it after that, though. I felt bad.
No kidding.
Because that was disrespectful to not actually have watched and understood.
But Cranston sniffed you out.
Oh, he sniffed it out. And I did watch the show. And my daughter did come in when Gus pulled out the box cutter.
Are you serious?
Wow.
She walked right in the room. Wow.
Did it change how you viewed the show, having then caught up and watched
it? Sure.
Yeah.
It was a complicated show. I had this stupid scheme in my mind that Walter White and all the drug dealers were friends hanging out together. And they were trying to do this work. I really... But, you know, here's how I justified it. This is going to sound weak, but really, I said... My job here is to be Saul. And Saul doesn't know what's going on in Walter White's personal life.
Good save.
He only knows what the person he's talking to. He doesn't know this, you know, show that he's in. So, hey, it's actually an actor's choice to not read and understand the story.
What's your favorite good Saul Goodman line?
Now you're the handsome one. When Jesse gets the kicked out of him, and I look at him in the hospital bed, and what do I say? I don't have the exact line, but I look at Walter White, and I go, how about that? Now you're the handsome one. You're the pretty one.
Fantastic. What a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, thank you.
This is just your...
It's great to sit and talk, and thanks for letting me go deep on these things.
I love it. That's what we're here for, and I greatly appreciate you... wanting to. So thank you for being here. Normal is available in theaters nationwide tomorrow, April 17th. Everybody go see it, and you won't believe what happens to Henry Winkler. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Great stuff, man.
Only in the movies.
Only in the movies.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show. The podcast.